Good afternoon, ladies. We are studying today Parashat Vayakhel. In most years, Parashat Vayakhel is read together with Parashat Pekudeh. But being that this year is a leap year, Parashat Vayakhel is read separately, and next week we have Parashat Pekudeh again separately. Our parasha is somewhat repetitious because it is discussing the subject that the Torah has discussed in the previous three parashiyot. Parashat Terumah, Parashat Tesaveh, Parashat Kitisa, all discuss the construction of the Mishkan, the money that was collected, how they used it, the dimensions. We learned about the clothes of the Kohanim, the different ketoret, the incense, the oils. And our parasha really is a review again of all that information. How much money they collected, what they did with it, etc. It is truly a challenge anytime we come to these parashiyot in order to find something new. The challenge is not the Torah's challenge. The Torah is filled with a wealth of information. The challenge is on the darshan to bring it out. The Torah is not deficient by any means. I've said many times that you could dwell on one pasuk of the Torah and you could dwell on it for 150 years and study nothing else but one pasuk. And you're able to draw more lessons and more understanding. Our Torah is an eternal book. It's not limited to one or two interpretations. I told you the Ben Yishai once on the pasuk poteach et yadecha umasbi'a lechol chai rason that we say in the Ashrei, that one pasuk, he himself said over 150 interpretations, and each interpretation was a blockbuster, was a novelty. And there's a great misconception about the Torah. Many people think that the Torah is narrow-minded. They think that the Torah is a restricted subject, that it's a subject that is very, very limited, and it's the exact opposite. It's the exact to the contrary. There is no other subject in the world that is more broad, that is more open, that is more wide, that is more elastic, like the Torah itself. In mathematics, there's only one answer to the question. 4 + 3 = 7. That's it. And the teacher is stuck. You can't give another interpretation. In science, there's only one answer to an equation. There's not two answers. In any field of knowledge, it's a very restricted study. It's limited to one answer. However, when you study Torah, you're able to take the same pasuk, and you're able to give one interpretation. And the listener says, wow, that's a great interpretation. Then you give a second interpretation, and the listener says, wow, that's just as good as the first one. And then you give a third, and the listener says, wow, I'm amazed. All three are beautiful. And you can go on and on and on. There's not one correct answer in Torah. The subject is wide open. I want to remind you, on the study of the Pesukim that we read now, there's many commentators that have offered their interpretations to our Torah. And I say commentators, I'm referring to the classic commentators. The most classic of all commentators obviously would be Rashi. I don't know exactly how Rashi accomplished what he did in one lifetime. The man had to be angelic. He was an angel, Rashi. I have no other interpretation. How was one man able to write commentary on every single pasuk in the Torah, in the Navi, in the Ketubim? That's 24 books. 24 very, very hard books, and that she has a commentary on almost every pasuk. But that's only one of his accomplishments. On every word of the Mishnah, that she has a commentary. On every word of the Talmud, that she has a commentary. It's not humanly possible. We talk about some of the great sages of the generation. You know, if you wrote one book, two books, five books, but to give an interpretation to the entire religion, this is humanly impossible. And I want you to know another thing. Rashi, according to the tradition, was a wine merchant. Which means, how do you have time to write all this and as a side thing sell wine for a living? Today we have the rabbis studying in the Kollel, God bless them all, that they study from early in the morning until late at night, and they cannot involve themselves in worldly pursuits. And still, we are nowhere near the scholarship of Rashi, that was able to juggle making wine and at the same time writing all these pirushim. And again, that's only one commentator. You have the Ramban. The Ramban is a masterful interpretation. Ramban was Sephardi. The Ramban lived about, I would say, 1,000 years ago, one of the great rabbis of Spain. He offers one of the most classic interpretations of the Torah, but many times he's at odds with Rashi. Rashi says one interpretation, and the Ramban says something else. And they're both wonderful. And you read them both and you say, who's right? We cannot judge who's right, because they both make sense. They both have understanding. And then you have the interpretation of the Ibn Ezra that gives a third interpretation, argues on both of them. And after you finish the Ibn Ezra, you open up the Datzik and Ibn Ba'alei HaTosafot. And then when you start, you see the Pirush HaRosh. And you can go on and on, the Pirush of the Rashbam. There's so many commentators just on one pasuk of the Torah. And all of them give wonderful, clear interpretations that are still applicable till today. And I tell you again, go to mathematics. 4 plus 3 is 7. They're not going to tell you, but there's another mathematician that wants to say 6. It can't be. The one that says 6 is wrong. In all the other sciences, there's one answer. In Torah, there's hundreds and hundreds of answers. That's what makes the book divine. God is forever. God is eternal. So listen to what I'm telling you now. In eternal God, when He writes a book, the book is eternal as well. That means there's no end to the book. There's no end to God. There's no end to His book. That means you never get to a point where you say, I've exhausted all the interpretations. You never exhaust the interpretations. There's three words in the Torah, towards the end of the Torah. Penu lachem safona. Very powerful words. Penu lachem safona. God tells the Jewish people, turn to the north. They were traveling in the desert, so God says, make a right turn. Penu lachem safona. The Gaon Mevilna, one of the later rabbis, he was only from maybe 250 years ago. On those three words, Penu lachem safona, he says he had a dream one night, and came to him in a dream 1,280 interpretations to those three words. I don't know exactly what could you interpret on these three words. You tell your friend when you're driving, make a left at the light. Oh, I can explain that 1,280 ways. How? But he had 1,280 interpretations. And he says one of the interpretations includes the entire study of psychology. In what? In three words of the Torah. That's what it means. It's an eternal book. There's a pasuk in Tehilim. Torat Adonai Temima. Our Torah is complete. I saw a wonderful interpretation recently. What was David HaMelech Alev HaShalom telling us? Our Torah is complete. Of course it's complete. But I think it's missing words. We know if a Sefer Torah is missing even one letter, it's pasul. We have to take it out and bring out a different Sefer. What did David HaMelech say? Our Torah is complete. What he was saying is like this. You could learn Torah for 1,000 years. And you know what? The Torah is still complete. You didn't make a dent in it. You didn't even start emptying it. It's not like a person has a cake in front of you. A person has a cake, so the cake is limited. It doesn't always remain complete. Somebody might eat a little of the whipped cream on top, the cake is still complete, you can't tell the difference. But once the first person takes the first slice of cake, it's obvious the cake is not complete anymore, the cake is missing. The Torah, you can take out of it, there are short, hiddushim, concepts, ideas, and you could empty it out for 1,000 years, and you look at the Torah, it's still complete. You didn't make a dent. I always give you the example of somebody that had a great idea. He bet his friend he's going to empty out the Atlantic Ocean. Huh? His friend tells him, you know, there's zillions of gallons. How you can empty out the Atlantic? You know, you'll see. He goes very, very diligently with a styrofoam cup. And he says, that's all I'm doing. I'm quitting my job. And all day long, cup after cup after cup. And he's emptying. 20 years later, he's still there, emptying out cup after cup. He says, how you doing? Oh, I'm almost there. I'm getting there. He's going. And I ask you, ladies, after 2,000 years, you look at the Atlantic Ocean. Do you say, wow, it's receding. Wow, it went down. Oh, boy, we have a drought. Nothing. He can empty out 1 million gallons and everything is still intact. Torah Tashem Temima, the Torah is complete. And therefore, I get very offended. Not that the Torah doesn't need Rabbi Mansour to defend it. But I get offended when somebody would come along and say, well, this parasha over here, there's nothing to say. No. You have nothing to say. The Torah has eternity to say. You might not have the eyes to see it. You know, if a person is searching for a treasure, so the treasure is hidden under the ground. Okay. The treasure is hidden under the ground. So they tell him there's a treasure in this neighborhood. He goes to the neighborhood. He says there's nothing here.
Nah.
Just because you don't see it doesn't mean there's nothing here. If you would dig and search a little deeper, you'd find diamonds, you'd find gold. The same thing with the Torah. There's a wealth of information here. In every single parasha, there's never such thing, as I once heard one rabbi once say, the parasha is very dry. Very dry. The Torah is not a wine, first of all. The Torah is not a something that you say is lacking. The Torah is very, very rich. The Torah is very moist. The Torah is, it's like an oil field. Wherever you drill, there's geysers. I want to give you an example. Our Torah in the beginning talks about Shabbat. Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melacha. 6 days you go to work. Ubayom ha-shivi'i yelachem kodesh. And the seventh day is holy. Shabbat, Shabbaton, Adonai. Kol ha'aseh bo melacha. Yumat. Must point that out. As important as it is to keep the Shabbat, that's how significant it is, Hilul Shabbat. The desecration of the Shabbat. The Torah doesn't mince its words. I don't want to scare anybody here. But the Torah clearly says, "Kol ha'aseh bo melacha yumat l'alechem." The Torah puts the most strictest punishment on Hilul Shabbat. The most strictest punishment that the Torah offers is not the electric chair. It's not the lethal injection. The most strict punishment that the Torah offers is sikila. Sikila is stoning. I'm not going to give you the details of the glamorous death of stoning, but you can imagine how gory and how unappetizing such a death is. The most strict death that shows you what Shemirat Shabbat is. Lo teva'aru esh b'chol mosmoteichem b'yom Shabbat. The Torah says, do not make a fire on Shabbat. End of subject. And the rabbis ask, there is a misconception. Most people, including the speaker, if you'd ask us, we'd answer, yes, I'm a Shomer Shabbat. And Shomer Shabbat means a lot of interpretations to a lot of people. It's a relative interpretation. It's all on what you understand Shemirat Shabbat is. Some people, to them, to be Shomer Shabbat is, I don't go in a car. Shomer Shabbat. Another fellow might say, Shabbat to me is I don't turn on lights. Or I don't change channels on the television. Each one has their conception of what they think Shabbat is or is not. But what is Shabbat? What is Shemirat Shabbat? What is the true interpretation? There are 39 categories. I'll refer them to as categories of forbidden labor on Shabbat. Shabbat is much more than turning on lights and running electrical equipment. There are 39 categories. They're called the Lamed Fet Melachot, the 39 labors that are prohibited on Shabbat. Now these are, I say categories because each category has a whole subdivision. And there's many laws that come out of each category. So really, you can only be a Shomer Shabbat in truth if you study the 39 categories. I want you to know that the Talmud has a tractate called Masechet Shabbat. It is one of the biggest Masechtot in the Shas, over 150 pages. The Halakha. There's a separate volume in the Halakha discussing the laws of Shabbat. So obviously it's not something where you could just follow Shabbat from logic. It might be possible to follow the laws of Lashon Hara from logic. Because basically, you know when you're saying something that's not right. You know when you're saying something that you shouldn't say. So you can figure out Lashon Hara basically from your gut, from your feelings. But you can't figure out Shabbat unless you know the laws. Unless you know the halachot. They're not logical. These categories are from God, and you can't figure them out on yourself. Which means, example, just to show you how you can't figure it out. I'm in my house on Shabbat, and I have a piece of furniture, a table, it's very heavy. And I want to go up to the attic, and I need a table in the attic. Mutar, it's permissible. I could take the table, folding table, whatever it is, lift it up, walk up 3 flights of steps, go to the attic, I'm so huffing and puffing, I carry the table all the way up, just open it up, no problem, mutar, it's permissible. But if a person goes into the public domain on Shabbat, with a bizar, one shell, one seed in his pocket, Shabbat, I'm enjoying Shabbat, what's the matter? Like a bird, and throw the seeds on the ground, in the public domain, asur, what are you talking about? I could lift the table, weighs 50 pounds to my attic. That's permissible. But to carry one simsum in the public domain on Shabbat, asur. So again, I don't make the laws, by the way. So nobody should have any claims on me. How could you say that? I'm only coming to report the news to you over here. I wish I could make the news good news. And, you know, if it was up to me, maybe I would change some of the laws as well. But I don't have that authority. So I'm only coming to report to you what the Torah says. But I'm just trying to, is that logical what I just, of course not logical. To me, Shabbat is rest. Me, why not? Walk in the street, on the park, wait to visit, put throw his things on the ground, stand in your backyard, water the lawn, beautiful. Anything better? But to carry chairs and tables, I would say it's forbidden, so we don't know anything. So again, Shemirat Shabbat is not based on an assumption, on what you think, on what you heard, it's based on. So my question then today is very simple. If there's 39 categories, why does the Torah only tell me one category? Don't make a fire. Lo tiva'aru esh b'chol moshmotechem. Either don't tell me any of the categories, and I'll know it from the Talmud, because that's where they're really written in the Talmud. Or if you're going to start telling me the categories, tell me all 39. Why did you single out fire? Understand the question? Why does it specifically say, Lo tiva'aru esh b'chol moshmotechem b'yom ha-Shabbat? So I saw one interpretation as follows. Where did we get these 39 categories from? For example, one of the categories is plowing. One of the categories is planting. One of the categories is riding. One of them is racing. Where did they get all these categories? Who made them up? So our rabbis tell us, these were the work that was done when they built the Mishkan. The contractor that built the Mishkan, his name was Bezalel. He's not around anymore today, ladies. But Bezalel was a master contractor, he was a master architect. And when he constructed the Mishkan, there were 39 different labors that he used to get it done. So those are the 39 labors that become forbidden on Shabbat. And I'm going to give you the depth today. I'm going to go a little deeper than I would normally go, but I have to explain it to you. What's the explanation? Just because the 39 labors were done in the Mishkan, why should that become forbidden on Shabbat, the 39 labors? What's the connection between the Mishkan and Shabbat? Bezalel was such a man that had such powers that when he built the Mishkan, the Zohar writes that it was considered a miniature world. Now, I don't mean a miniature world that it was like Little Israel, where you see like a miniature Beit HaMikdash and Tel Aviv and Haifa. No, I don't mean that. It wasn't a model. What it means that it was a miniature world that Bezalel was able to calculate every process, every labor that God used to build the world. Bezalel used those exact labors to build the Mishkan. How did he know? He knew. Nobody knew except Bezalel. He knew that when God created the world, it took God 39 different procedures to get the world built. So Bezalel used those exact 39 procedures that God used to build the world, to build the Mishkan. And that's why whatever is forbidden in the Mishkan is forbidden on Shabbat, because what's the purpose of Shabbat? God worked for 6 days to build the world, and on the seventh day He rested. So we're obligated to rest from the work that God did during the 6 days. We don't know the work He did during the 6 days. It doesn't tell us. Well, Bezalel gave it to us when He built the Mishkan. He says, pay attention to what I'm doing. Whatever I'm doing during this construction, that's what God did during the 6 days. So therefore there were 39 different categories and they became forbidden. That means God used plowing, God used planting. How He did it, I don't know exactly. But somehow the 39 categories God used to create this world. But there's one category that wasn't done during the 6 days. And that's fire. When was fire created, ladies? Very good. Fire was created on Motzei Shabbat on Saturday night. What happened? How was fire created? Motzei Shabbat, Adam HaRishon, it says, was playing with some rocks. And he rubbed two rocks together. And all of a sudden a spark came out. The fire was created. That's why we have a custom. On Saturday nights, we have to make a barakah on the fire. Why? Because that's when it was created. So we're commemorating the creation of the fire on Motzei Shabbat. Adam created the fire on Motzei Shabbat. Incidentally, if you don't have a candle for Havdalah, you cannot make the Beorei Meorei HaEsh blessing on a light. Because we're not commemorating Benjamin Franklin's invention of electricity. We're commemorating fire. So if you don't have a fire, so that you don't make the beracha. But the point is like this. I would have thought that since fire wasn't used in the 6 days, since it was created on Motzei Shabbat, I would have thought that maybe it's not included in the Isur of Shabbat. That's what the Torah says, Lo tevaru esh b'chol moshodechem. You can't make a fire on Shabbat. That's why it has to single out fire. Because you would have thought, well, that wasn't during the 6 days fire. Fire was it was after Shabbat, so maybe it's not included. So the Torah has to come along and say, no, even fire is included. Now fire doesn't only mean you can't light a match, that's for sure. Fire includes turning on an engine. The person turns on an engine, so you're creating a flame. Turning on a light. Electricity is also a form of fire. Hakam Avadia once said that the secular Jews, they would make fun of this halakha. They would say, what does the Torah mean when it says fire? That doesn't mean turning on a light. Turning on a light is effortless. When you just go to switch, it doesn't... In the olden days, to make a fire was a burden, like Adam and Ishon taking rocks and rubbing them. The Torah doesn't want you to sweat and make a hole to do, but to flick on a switch, what do you think? That's not fire. So Hakam of Adya said, what are they going to do to that guy? After 120 years, they're going to tell me, in the Olam Abba, Baruch Abba, welcome, we're waiting for you. Thank you very much. You're the guy that said electricity is not fire. Yeah, I'm the guy. Please, we have a seat for you over here. Please sit down over here. What is this seat over here? There's electric chair. Electric chair? What are you scared of? And then you said it's not fire. They're going to plug it in. All of a sudden the guy's hair is going to stand up over here. Shut it. What happened? Oh, when the guy's hair falls out and the guy's all charcoal, then you say, oh, it is fire. Oh, now it's fire. And Olam Abba, you said it's not fire. So that's what it has to speak it out. But I wanted to say another interpretation. And I think it's also true. We've spoken many times about the negative effect of anger, of chaos. Anger is one of the most destructive traits that exists, not only what it does to us spiritually, the damages, what it does to the Jewish neshama is unparalleled. I told you that Arizal used to say, when somebody goes to the mikveh, amongst the things they're supposed to think of when they're immersed is, please God, forgive me for the sins of anger. Now I find that fascinating, because there's 613 mitzvot in the Torah. The item that he picked was anger, that you should be thinking about in the mikveh. Kaas. It destroys the soul. It eats away at the soul. And we all know what it does physically. Physically, it has to be one of the most harmful things that a person can do to his body. What it does to his heartbeat. What it does to his blood pressure. What it does to his nervous system. Ulcers, high blood pressure, etc. Much has been said medically about the dangers of kaas, of anger. And anger is a law that applies 7 days a week. But the most difficult day of the week to keep anger in check, undoubtedly, is Shabbat. Why? I'll explain it to you. Because the dynamics of Shabbat, everybody's home. Everybody's on top of each other. Everybody's just sitting around. During the week, everybody's busy. By 8 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody home. The house is empty. This one's in school, and this one went to work, and this one went away. So there's really no time to get on each other's nerves so much. And we come home, this one eats at 6 o'clock, this one eats at 7, this one's eating in the city, this one's eating in the... So there's really not too much time to interact, to get into problems. And in synagogue as well. The synagogues are nowhere as full on a Tuesday than it is on Shabbat. And even the people that are in synagogue on a Tuesday, they have to catch the train, they're going, they're rushing. So there's really no time for too much interaction where you can get into getting on people's nerves. But on Shabbat Kodesh, everybody's home, nothing to do, at least that's the impression, that there's nothing to do, and people are just sitting around, and people are talking, and one thing leads to another. The kids are fighting, and the mother is getting a little nervous, and the father's a little nervous as well. Now, Hasram, it's a perfect ingredient, environment, where our tempers are challenged, and our nerves are afraid, and they're very, very thin, and therefore, how could there be great anger on Shabbat? I don't have to tell you, one of the first questions when a man comes home from shul is, what happened in shul today? What do they mean by that, what happened in shul? They prayed Shacharit, they read the Sefer Torah, they prayed Musaf. No, the action. Oh, you don't know, the president got up, he screamed at the vice president, this guy threw a chair, this guy... you missed it. What did I do? It was like a fight. But you don't hear that happen on a Wednesday that often, by the way. Nobody comes out of shul on Wednesday, what happened? Nothing ever happens on a Wednesday in shul. But on Shabbat, it's just the way it is. Everybody's sitting down, the shul's full, there's more pressure, however you want to say it, but that's a day that's prone for chaos. I'll give you a bigger secret. The most opportune moment for anger of the whole week is Erev Shabbat, is Friday afternoon. That's a recipe that's made for getting angry and getting nervous. Especially on the winter Shabbatot, where the time is very short, so people are rushing to get in the shower, to bathe, to get dressed, to get prepared, to prepare the food. I didn't do this statistic, but I know myself. I can't say in my life, but I would say 99% of the time, the only time that my suit is missing a button is on Friday afternoon. Never, otherwise wherever I'm going, is every button is intact. It's always on Erev Shabbat. We have 3 minutes to get to the synagogue, you put on your shirt, it's missing the... What? Where's the cleaners? How come you didn't do it? How come she didn't sew it? How come... And then already there's pressure. And everybody's nervous as it is. I didn't do a survey. but maybe somebody will do this one day. Ask your plumber, one of the most problems that happen in plumbing, of course, Friday afternoon.
And the oven sometimes.
For sure. Ask your electrician. The oven will break on a Friday afternoon more times than a Thursday. And again, I could be out of line. I didn't do a survey, but I know it to be true. Because you're not going to have hot water. You'll have hot water all week long. Somehow on Friday, nobody even tried. They're not going to be out. It broke on Friday afternoon. The oven somehow worked for 20 years. Friday afternoon is going to break. And that's the test. That's the test. That's the test of Friday. Why? Because the Yetzirah loves it. If everybody can get nervous, now if we can go into Shabbat when nobody's talking to each other, beautiful. So now the whole Shabbat is spoiled. Everybody comes at the table giving each other dirty looks. Everybody's upset at each other. Nobody's talking. Well, you did it. You didn't. The boy, I'm not coming to the table. You didn't. Now everybody's machloket. The Shabbat. So I'm giving you really inside information here. I'm telling you that that's his plan. So when it happens, you have to be aware. It's, I know what's going on over here. You're not going to get me. Go try to fool the next door neighbor. I know this trick already over here. You're trying to get me nervous to ruin the Shabbat. Now, we know anger. There are many ways that we say a person is angry. One way they say he's fuming. His blood is boiling. He's on fire. The Torah is telling us, Lo teva'aru esh bechol moshmotechem beyom ha-Shabbat. It's not talking about the physical fire. It's talking about the fire of anger. Don't let yourself become hot-headed on the Shabbat. Don't let yourself become overheated. Lo teva'aru esh. It's talking about the fire that's within. You have to keep your equilibrium. And that's the test of the Shabbat. Because again, especially for the ladies, where the toil of the Shabbat is on them, with the preparations of the food and the dishes and the cleaning and the kids running around, nobody's in school, etc., etc. So therefore, all the more so, Torah reminds you, Shabbat, don't let the Yetzirah spoil it. Tevaru esh. So Rabbi, I never made a fire on Shabbat. You made a fire in you. You turned on the electricity in your body. That's also a fire. And I want to explain to you something, ladies, on this subject of the Shabbat. There was a story told of a young student that went to the yeshiva, I think it was the Miri Yeshiva in Poland, and he used to stay by a certain couple. In the olden days, they didn't have dormitories. So the boys would have to stay by different homes. Religious people that were generous, that opened their house up, gave them a bed, give them food. And one time, this boy is telling a story. It happened, it must be in the early 1900s. He's telling a story, he's by his host. And the wife tells the husband, Erev Shabbat, Friday, go by the do the errands and all that, and you come home quickly so we can prepare. Good. The boy's listening. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. The husband already left at 9 o'clock in the morning. Now it's 2 hours later. It's 11. It's early in the day. And the wife starts getting nervous. Where is he? Where is he already? She starts going on the porch. She's looking down the block. Where is he? So the boy says, my dear hostess, it's only 11 o'clock in the morning. What are you nervous for? Shabbat's not till 7 o'clock. He'll come when he comes. You're going to get nervous from now? 11 o'clock in the morning already? He's coming home. What are you worried? No, you don't understand. What do you mean? Let me tell you a story. He says, we were married for many years. We had no children. No alechim. Finally, after many tefillot, etc., God gave us a child. But unfortunately, the child was diagnosed with something wrong with his heart. We went to the greatest doctors in Vilna. The doctors looked at the child and said, there's nothing we could do. The heart is damaged, and we don't know how long he's going to live. And you can imagine how devastating it was for us. Here, we're waiting all these years for a child, and now, Chas v'Shalom, we get such news. So on the way back from Vilna, somebody told us, why don't you go stop off in Raden to visit the Hafetz Chaim? He's alive. And he'll give you a blessing. Okay, Hafetz Chaim, it's worth it. They get to the Hafetz Chaim's house, so they tell the couple, we're sorry, the Hafetz Chaim is not feeling well, he's old, he's tired, he's not seeing anybody. This is our only shot. We need Berakah. He's not seeing anybody. Min HaShamayim, one of the grandchildren of the Hafetz Chaim showed up, and he sees this guy. He says, I know you, I lived in yeshiva. They were in the same room together in yeshiva. He says, what are you here for? I came to see your grandfather. I need a Berakah. Of course. But he said he's not seeing anybody. Don't worry, come in with me. He brings them in, the husband and the wife, and they're crying. The wife is crying to the Hafetz Chaim. Hafetz Chaim's reading a sefer. He said, what's the matter? What happened? Our child was diagnosed with something in his heart. How many children do you have? This is it. Only one child after so many years. So the Hafetz Chaim told me. He said, you shomer Shabbat? I was shomer Shabbat. Good. Accept upon yourself that you should be ready for Shabbat with the table set, with the candles on the table, and the food, everything ready by Friday afternoon, middle of the day. Don't let the Shabbat bring you in. You bring in the Shabbat. You're ready for the Shabbat. You should be prepared from Friday morning, for Friday afternoon already. Prepared. You accept upon yourself? I accept. You have no problems. Go home. Everything's fine. They go home. They go to the doctor in Vilna to look at the child a couple of months later. The doctor in Vilna says, this is a different child. What is a different child? So you know it's not a different child. It's the same child. What I mean to say is he has a different heart. This is not the same heart. Who'd you go to? It's not this. The heart that this boy had was damaged. This is a perfect heart. So we went to the Hafetz Chaim. So the doctor, the not religious doctor in Vilna, he says, a doctor can only fix a heart. The Hafetz Chaim can give you a new heart. And that's what, and the zechut of what? Not Shemirat Shabbat. They were Shomer Shabbat. Being ready for Shabbat. We cannot overemphasize the importance to be ready for the Shabbat. And I always think to myself, if the President of the United States was coming to have dinner by you, the table would be set from Wednesday. Not only set from Wednesday, with barricades in the living room. Nobody can walk into the living room. Nobody can walk into the kitchen. You'd sleep in a hotel for 3 days. Because you don't want the house to be ruined, because the President of the United States is going to come to have dinner, and everything. Imagine when the President walks in, and he sees you setting the table. Oh, Mr. Bush, 1 minute, we're almost finished. Could you help me get the cinnamon from the top counter? What are you talking about? Has to be prepared. Has to be ready. The Shabbat is not President Bush. Shabbat is God. The Zohar says, Shabbat is God. Whenever you hear the word Shabbat, Shabbat is God. God is coming to visit you on Shabbat as a visitor. So therefore, you have to have the preparations done before. And the Hafetz Chaim, he was able to change a child's heart from defective to perfect. Why? In the zichut of being ready. I understand that that's a challenge. It is quite unfortunate. In the winter, I understand it's challenging to be ready for Shabbat early because of all the obligations that we have. But as the Shabbatot, as the Fridays get a little longer, there really is no excuse. People at 4 o'clock on Erev Shabbat are starting to go shopping. What are you doing? It's Erev Shabbat. Where are you going? 4 o'clock, we're going to go now shoot some 9 holes of golf. Where are you going? Erev Shabbat. Which means all of us know Shabbat. But what we lost is the Erev Shabbat. In Judaism, it's not Friday. The Goyim say, thank God it's Friday. We don't have a Friday in our camp. We have an Erev Shabbat. And we don't have a Saturday night either. We have a Motzei Shabbat. It's a three-pronged event. It's the Erev Shabbat, it's the Shabbat, and it's the Motzei Shabbat. So a lot of people, they like to check in just for the Shabbat. Bizarre, meaning a minimum. And the Erev Shabbat is Friday means nothing. Friday's a weekday. Friday's Tuesday. Friday's not Tuesday. In the olden days, the men used to go to the mikveh on Erev Shabbat. Every Erev Shabbat to be on the mikveh. Why? God is coming to visit us. Shalom aleichem, malachei asharet. Erev Shabbat, we're inviting the angels to come sit with us. The angels don't eat with us on Tuesday night. Erev Shabbat, malachei asharet. Angels come into the house. They're sitting at your table. Boachem leshalom, barichuni leshalom. We're sitting with the Shekhinah at the table. It's the highest madrigan. Nerot Shabbat is the Or Elyon, it's the highest level of the light of the divine. With the Devre Torah, with the Pizmonim, but I'm talking to be prepared for it. Not that Chas v'Shalom, like many people, Friday night, after Shabbat, they jump into the shower. Oh, my Yisrael. Who heard such a thing? Who heard? In my house, never. I told you about my grandfather, we were ready from 4 o'clock in the summer, he was ready for Shabbat. Where are we going to go now? And then Shabbat, they come home from work, or they come to the table in their weekday clothes. This is Shabbat Kodesh. The president comes to your house, you're going to wear the shirt that you wore in the schoolyard that day? Or you're going to go rent a tuxedo, you're going to come to the table with a bow tie and a cummerbund? Of course. There's Shabbat, you're going to wear the clothes? No, I'll change it. Tomorrow morning we go to Shabbat Kodesh. The dress, the preparation, as I said. But if I could say one last idea on the yad of the Shabbat, Bechbot Shabbat, which I'm concerned as well, and please don't take it the wrong way. I know what I want to say, but I hope I could convey it in the proper way. I'm very clear what I want to say. The Torah says, "V'shamru b'nei Yisrael et haShabbat, la'asot et haShabbat ledorotam berit olam." Says the Jewish people will keep Shabbat. But they will keep Shabbat Nedorotam for the generations. This word needs to be understood. What do you mean, keep the Shabbat for the generations? I'm only living in one generation. I can keep Shabbat for my generation. How can I keep Shabbat for the generations? I don't live in the next generation or the one after that. We don't live in the future. What does it mean? V'shamru b'nei Yisrael et haShabbat, la'asot et haShabbat Nedorotam. And I'm going to explain it to you. Our Shabbat has to be a type of Shabbat, the way we observe it, that we can almost guarantee that our children will also be Shomer Shabbat. And that our grandchildren will be. It has to be such a Shabbat where it'll have endurance. It has to be a type of Shabbat that can be passed over to the next generation as is, intact. I give you an example. How careful we have to be and sensitive to this inyan of Shabbat. Baruch Hashem, on Leil Shabbat, Friday night, everybody has wonderful Seudah. Who will sacrifice Seudah Friday night? Nobody will sacrifice. It's the most wonderful meal of the entire week. We sit down, we're enjoying the traditional foods that we're accustomed to eat. There's no Me'ain Olam Abba. There's Olam Abba in the food. There's a special Shabbat spice in the food. I've always said it. You can eat a lahmajin on a Tuesday, it doesn't taste the same as eating it on the Shabbat. No question. Eat kibbeh hamda on Wednesday for lunch, it doesn't taste like kibbeh hamda. Doesn't taste the right way. Have it on the Shabbat, it's a different taste. There's a special spice called the Shabbat that goes into all the food. We believe that. And our kids come to the table excited with the Devre Torah, with the Bakashot and the Pizmonim and from the synagogue and Berachot, we kiss each other's hands, the mother, the father. It's beautiful. But I'll tell you what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about Shabbat lunch. Shabbat lunch, unfortunately in the modern world, has become more like a Sunday morning brunch. Has become very casual. Now, it doesn't say anywhere necessity that you have to have meat per se on Shabbat. It does not say that. It says you have to have oneg, pleasure, whatever gives you pleasure. But I want to point out what happens on a Shabbat lunch. Everybody becomes on a diet all of a sudden on Shabbat lunch. From the night before that, nobody was on any sort of diet. And now we're going to have a light lunch. And you say, what's the matter with that? I'm going to have a little egg salad. Anything wrong with a little cracker, a little tuna fish? There's nothing wrong with that. But it becomes informal. The food makes the formality. If you went to a wedding and they served you tam-tams with cream cheese, what's the difference? Food. But there's a formality. There's certain foods that cause a person to be more serious. I don't know what it is. You know, I hope I'm explaining it. When a child sees that Shabbat lunch is It's whatever you like. It's open buffet. Eat whatever you want. I'm gonna have a bagel, and I'm gonna have this, and you know what? I'm gonna have leftovers. So one guy's sitting at the table having the Friday night dinner leftover. This guy's having a bagel with a cream cheese, and so the whole Shabbat lunch becomes compromised. Ma, I'm not having lunch today. We hear such things. I'm not washing. What are you talking about? Shabbat Kodesh. So that's the first generation. As parents, we have to make Shabbat lunch formal. Like it was when we were young, we would go to our grandparents for lunch. And our grandparents would have the entire Seudah set, would sit with our uncles and our aunts together, and we'd have with the Birkat HaMazon, with the regular formalities of Shabbat lunch. You knew you're not going to be home until 1:30. Finished. I mean, not impossible, doesn't happen. But not today. We're coming from Knesset. In Knesset, I ate something. I'm going to go to my friends. We're going to go play ball. And now I'm going to go up to sleep. I'm tired. And as parents in the modern world, okay, honey, whatever you want. The food's on the This generation will be Shomer Shabbat. I'm not worried about this generation. What's going to be the next generation? The next generation, already we delivered them a Shabbat that was compromised. We delivered them a Shabbat that's only one third of a Shabbat. And usually when we deliver a compromised package, it only gets worse. It doesn't reverse itself and get better. And therefore, as parents, please don't take it. I'm talking to myself as well, because we all fall into bad habits. We have to keep the format. I'm not telling you what to make for the menu. Don't walk out and say, the rabbi said you have to have meat for Shabbat. That's not what I'm saying. And anybody that heard that message, you heard me wrong. What I'm telling you is the Shabbat lunch has to be a formal lunch. It has to be formal. Every child has to be at the table. Everybody has to be dressed in Dignei Shabbat at the table. It's unacceptable that a child or a parent for a Shabbat lunch will come down to in sweatpants. Shabbat, the president's here. What are you doing? So that means the child has an image. Shabbat is one meal, Friday night. After that already, it's just we're looking at the clock. When is it over? When are we let out of jail? When is the sentence finished? This is not proper. Baruch Hashem, we come to class to learn. We don't even realize sometimes it's a mistake. But it's not a proper behavior. The Shabbat dress, the Shabbat meal has to be more not taken for granted, as if it's voluntary. Shabbat lunch is not voluntary. The Zohar writes, and we don't do this, but we should do it. The better food you're supposed to eat for Shabbat lunch. Most people, Friday night, that's when we have the best food, because it's still hot and it's fresh. Shabbat lunch, it's always not as that good, but really the Zohar says that's the main meal. Friday night dinner is Yitzhak Avinu's dinner. Shabbat lunch is Seudat Avraham Avinu. Abraham's higher level. We cannot compromise it. We cannot just let it to become, as I said, an afternoon brunch or a breakfast that is unacceptable. With the same Nitilat Yadayim, with the same Berachot, and the Berkat, whatever you're normally accustomed to doing with the family should not, especially when it comes in the summer months, where everybody wants to run away. I prayed for a Sminyan, I ate already, no such thing. We have lunch 11:30. It's mandatory, everybody's attendance. It's mandatory, everybody's dress code. And the food, if it's not going to be a meat meal, it should be a formal. Person could have fish, the same thing. It's also formal. It shouldn't just be a dietetic from the cookbook of the Weight Watchers menu, where it's Chabeav on Shabbat, where everybody's eating things, sprouts, and nothing that's substantial. It's not Chabeav Shabbat. Shabbat Kodesh. You have to have a hot meal on Shabbat. You have to have hot food on Shabbat. You know that. On Shabbat lunch, you have to have something hot. That's the halakha. So that's your sheet, another thing. We'll work about that in 2 years. I'll talk about so that's your sheet. One step at a time, so that's your sheet. Ladies, halakha says you have to have something hot on Shabbat. Do you know there was a group of Jews called the Karaim? The Karaim were those that they vandalized the Torah. They didn't learn the Torah correctly. You know what they interpreted this pasuk? Lo tevaru esh b'chol moshpotechem b'yom Shabbat. Don't make a fire on Shabbat. They understood the pasuk that it means correct. that you're not allowed to have a fire on in your house on Shabbat, even if it was lit before Shabbat. Crazy people. But that's how they interpreted the Torah. They would sit in the dark. They would have no lights on, no candles. And these groups of Karaim, they would eat cold food on Shabbat. Because they misinterpreted the Pasuk. No matter when, they would always eat cold food because they believed you cannot have a fire in your house. That's corrupt. You're allowed to have a fire in your house. Your oven is allowed to be on. The warmer is allowed to be on. It's a mitzvah if it's on. And that's why the rabbis say, anybody that does not eat hot food on Shabbat lunch, you have to check their lineage. Because maybe they're coming from that group that ate cold food only. And therefore one has to be... What does it mean? One time we were on a trip with one of the, with Rabbi Diamond, for the school. We were together on a Shabbaton, and what happened? The night we went to the hotel, there was a blackout. They lost electricity. So now we're worried, what are we going to do now? Forget about the food, okay, we'll have cold food, but the rabbis, we have to have something hot. We have to have something hot before the Shabbat. So we found in one area there was an urn that still had hot water. He said, Rabbi Ella, come, we're going to have hot tea now. I don't drink tea. No, you have to have it because Shabbat, you have to have something hot. Because we don't want to be, they're going to think we're one of these Kadaim guys over there. So if we can't have the hameen, if we can't have the hot food, lefahot will have a hot cup of the tea in order to fulfill this mitzvah. That's a, ladies, it's not a halakha class, and by no means I'm not telling you the law. Everybody has their rabbi. Ask your local rabbi the details, the technicalities. I'm just giving you concepts that I think are hashkafic, not halachic. I'm giving you, the Shabbat has to be ledorotam. The Shabbat has to be just the way our grandparents delivered Shabbat to us. Baruch Hashem, we got a holy package. We have to deliver it the same way to our grandchildren. That we shouldn't get a Shabbat that had a beautiful formality and we give our children and grandchildren a casual Shabbat. Because if they get a casual Shabbat two generations later, it's just casual. It doesn't even have a Shabbat. Lo alechem. And therefore, Be'ezat Hashem, we have to mechazek the inyan of Shemirat Shabbat to learn the 39 categories. Go to Shiurim, they offer in the community. There's books written in all languages. You can study the 39 categories, not overnight. They didn't build Rome in a day. Every day you study one or two pages, or one halakha. On Shabbat itself, a little more knowledge. And then Be'ezat Hashem, we have a rule. Those that keep the Shabbat keeps them. Shabbat is an insurance. Kol ha-shomeret ha-shabbat, ha-shabbat shomer oto, the Shabbat protects them from all ha-shom, things that are not good. And B'ezras Hashem, we will have onig Shabbat, v'karat ha-shor onig, we'll have onig ha-chayim, pleasure of life, and B'ezras Hashem, mizokhe, l'chayi netzach. Amen.